Support for On Point with Tom Ashbrook and the following message comes from Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Rocket Mortgage's completely online process lets you get a custom mortgage solution wherever and whenever you want. Check out Rocket Mortgage at quickenloans.com/onpoint.
From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point from Philadelphia and the Democratic National Convention. It is the final night of the convention, and it all comes down to this. Hillary Clinton on stage making the case to the American people why she should be the next president of the United States. Others have been doing it on her behalf all week. 9/11 survivors, mothers, children, President Obama, Bill offering rousing testimonials about her experience, her tenacity, her warmth. Michael Bloomberg saying she's the only choice. Michelle Obama, Joe Biden bringing down the house for her. But she is the one running for president, and it is showtime tonight. Time to connect with voters, time to make the case against Donald Trump, time to convince the American people she's the one. This hour On Point, Hillary Clinton's moment, Hillary Clinton's challenge. You can join us on air or online where this conversation is always on. What do you want to hear from Hillary Clinton tonight? Are you all in or no way or on the fence? Trump supporters, are you still in lockstep with your candidate? We're at 800-423-8255. That's 800-423-TALK. Or join us anytime at onpointradio.org or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. Let's listen back to little Hillary Clinton through the years. 1992, she made her first appearance on 60 Minutes. She sat next to her husband, Bill Clinton, under some tough questioning about him and their marriage, and she said, "I'm not some little woman.
You know, I'm not sitting here as some little woman standing by my man like Tammy Wynette. I'm sitting here because I love him, and I respect him, and I honor what he's been through and what we've been through together."
That was then. She made it through those White House years. She went to the Senate in 2003, was a guest on the David Letterman Show, talked about working with Republicans in the Senate, 2003.
You know, it's not easy, but I have found a lot of the Republican senators and members of the House who I didn't know before to be, you know, really pretty good guys, good to work with, and whenever I can, I do.
Same year, Secretary of State, 2013, 10 years later, talking to the Council on Foreign Relations about America's leadership in the world.
"The United States must and will continue to lead in this century, even as we lead in new ways."
And here she was in Brooklyn, June 7th, on the campaign trail about continuing a fight for equality for all in the United States.
"This campaign is about making sure there are no ceilings, no limits on any of us."
I want to welcome all those watching us tonight on Facebook Live. We're streaming video there right now. Go to facebook.com/onpointradio. Take a look if you're not there already. And let's dive in. There's a little evolution of Hillary Clinton, and tonight is the night where it's all on the line for her. With me now in Philadelphia, Karen Tumulty, national political reporter for The Washington Post. Karen, great to have you here.
Great to be here.
Margaret Taleb joins us, senior White House correspondent covering Clinton 2016 for Bloomberg News. Margaret, this has become a convention tradition having you right
it
here.
It is, and it's great to be back.
And Jamel Bowie, chief political correspondent for Slate, returns to cap off the convention with us. Jamel, it's great to have you back with us tonight.
I'm glad to be back.
And so here we are. It has been kind of an unbelievable lineup. Margaret, let me come first to you. I mean, we have seen big, effective speech after big, effective speech this week. This was not like the Republican convention where sort of rally the family around. They had the whole schmear out there for Hillary. And here she is. She's all set up. Does she have the stuff to deliver tonight?
I mean, it's what we'll all be watching. She has so much to work with here. Such a robust, you know, across the aisle, within the aisle, within the liberal wing, with her husband, the president, right? So can she take that momentum and really knock it out of the park? Or will she deliver one of those kind of classic Hillary Clinton policy speeches where she has trouble calibrating her voice and connecting with the audience and doesn't smile enough and doesn't just act like a normal person, like, "Hey, guys, thanks," you know? And does it matter? Is that in the end what any of this is going to be about? It matters for effect tonight. It matters for the momentum coming out of the gate. She's on a bus tour the next few days.
You're on that bus with her. I think we're in that convoy.
On that ridiculous, hot, sweaty bus with too many people. But, you know, so maybe not everything is tied up in how she does, but a lot is riding on whether she can finally, on just a basic level, connect with people enough that they'll bother to get up that Tuesday morning and go to the polls.
Jamel Bowie, how do you see the challenge for Hillary Clinton tonight?
I see it in somewhat similar terms, although, you know, talking to voters around the country, I get the impression that there is a disconnect between what the press, how the press sees Hillary Clinton, which is someone who is very wonky and who has lots of plans and so on and so forth, and how sort of your typical person sees Hillary Clinton. I find myself continuously talking to people and they say things like, well, I don't know what plans Hillary Clinton has. And it's like, if you're the press, you're like, whoa, wait a sec.
She has plans out
there. Hillary Clinton is really literally made of plans. If she were a vending machine that was broken
plan,
and hit
plan,
it,
plan,
a plan would come out, right? Like, if she's just nothing but plans.
Right.
Voters say, I don't know if she's going to continue what Obama's going to do. Again, if you're following her as a journalist, that seems ludicrous. And so I almost think that tonight is a good opportunity to not worry so much about pros for Clinton and just to tell people what she's going to do.
Talk policy? I mean,
talk
that's catnip
policy.
For her. If somebody proposed that, she'd say she'd be all over it.
And because it's catnip for her, it's a situation in which she sounds very natural. She's not doesn't sound forced talking about policy. And I wonder if that is if in a certain sense tonight is an opportunity for her just to be, you know, the wonky plan person.
Karen Tumblety, poetry or prose? Wonky prose.
Well, I don't know that Hillary Clinton is capable of poetry. The most memorable speech that I can recall her ever giving, that really, in recent history at least, that really connected with people on a gut level, ironically enough, was her concession speech in 2008.
Yeah. The grace of it in the highest, hardest glass ceiling.
Right. And that is, you know, she's always she does her best when she's down. But also the challenge for her is not so much policy as kind of overcoming people's doubts about her character, doubts about her honesty. That's what comes through in the polling. And that is really not something you solve with a speech.
Margaret, what do you see her as most importantly up against? I mean, what is she up against here? She's in the polls. Nate Silver sat here with 538 the other night and said, if do it today, it's a toss-up. Who would have thought that? But that's exactly where she is. What's she up against in that?
She's up against, you know, two or three things. She's up against voters' real concerns about the economy, the future of the country, their safety, terrorism, that sort of stuff. And the idea that she's an extension of the Obama administration, and she's running like an extension of the Obama administration. She's not running away from that.
I mean, the photo from last night ultimately is of those two hugging on the stage. Couldn't get a bigger hug than that.
I've maybe never seen her hug anyone like that before ever. So, right. So she is going to be tied to President Obama. So part of her problem is that in some of those swing states, there are these real kind of economic and job concerns, and a lot of those voters, you know, blame Obama or at least blame the way it is. Mm-hmm. And if she represents both Obama and the way it is, are they going to want to vote for her? A secondary concern, I think, is the woman issue. It's not the woman issue among young voters. It's not the woman issue in major urban centers. And it's very hard to poll, so we don't know how much of an issue it is. But just by virtue of the fact that it's the first, we know it's probably to some degree an issue. So that's an issue.
Do you think it's a conscious thing for people, or is it just something in the back that they don't even aren't fully aware of?
I don't even know how much of an issue it is, because it's very hard to poll it. People are not honest when you ask them. But it's something that they're aware of, and she's constantly trying to calibrate how much does she play the woman card. And Nancy Pelosi earlier this week saying, like, ease up on the woman stuff. But on the other hand, it's a first. How do you not take advantage of it and try to use it to turn out? The problem is that when you play the woman making history card, that really inspires and turns out a big part of your base, but does it turn off some of the other people you're trying to bring
2008, there was a lot of commander-in-chiefy stuff. This year, there's a lot of mom and grandma stuff out there.
But there's still the T-shirts on the streets of Philadelphia of Hillary with the Superman woman, Supergirl.
Yes, no, that's all, it's all there. It's all there.
It's all there. So I think gender is one. The Obama legacy is the other. And the third is just Donald Trump. He's very fast on his feet. We saw him successfully kind of cut down, minimalize, and catch off guard 16 other people in his primary.
Yeah.
We haven't seen them really go toe-to-toe yet. We've seen the prelude of it, the flirtation with it, but they both needed to get through their conventions. There are, in theory, three debates coming up. In reality, at least one debate coming up. We will get to see these fireworks.
You don't think we'll get more than one, potentially?
I think we probably will, but there's been some speculation
amazing.
Whether he goes through with it.
But who would not want three debates?
Well, you know,
neither of them. I mean, who would want to minimize?
So Bloomberg had a breakfast with Governor Ed Rendell, former Governor Ed Rendell of Pennsylvania, in which Ed Rendell said, Rendell said he thought it was entirely possible that Trump would try to get out of a couple of those debates, unless he needed to do them. But basically, that if it was really, you know, if it was like really, really close,
I want to come back and look at that, think about that. But the speech is the thing tonight. Jamel, as she takes that podium, what's your take? What is she most importantly up against here?
I think she's very much up against perceptions of her honesty and trustworthiness. I mean, the thing that's so interesting about Hillary Clinton as a political figure, or at least perceptions of her, is that no one doubts that she is competent to be president of the United States. It's not really an issue for people. No one really doubts that much that she's able to handle national security concerns. You know,
she knows how the machinery works.
Right.
She knows,
and because Trump has so little experience with that stuff, what the political science suggests is that, like, they basically end up evened out. That, like, Trump doesn't get any particular advantage because he's a man, because he's so inexperienced, and Clinton gets more of an advantage despite her womanhood, because she's so identified with national security issues. So it really does come down to these ephemeral questions of her character. And I think the convention has done a decent job of trying to reintroduce Hillary Clinton as a human person and not some sort of pure symbol that exists, like, solely on the level.
How does she stand up there and convey, you can trust me? If people come in thinking otherwise, and the polls show many think otherwise.
That's, you know, if I had the answer to that question, I would not be sitting here.
It's the hardest thing to argue for yourself when you start out on your back foot, isn't it?
I think the easier case to make is that you can't trust Donald Trump.
Yes.
You have two nominees here who have the highest negative ratings of any two major party nominees in history. The playbook is very clear of how you run. When your opponent has high negatives, you make the race about your opponent.
Right. Mm-hmm.
So I think we saw President Obama and Vice President Biden and Tim Kaine really take some big whacks
last night.
I'm going to be interested in seeing whether Hillary Clinton continues to pursue that line.
Whether she goes straight at him. Karen Tumulty with The Washington Post, Margaret Tala with Bloomberg News, Jamel Bowie with Slate, please stand by. We are here in the arena on Hillary Clinton's big night, talking about what she needs to say to the American people to make the case for her election. Listeners, we really want to hear from you. Put your speechwriter's hat on right now. What should Hillary say? What's honest and true and compelling from her right here, right now, tonight? 800-423-8255 is our number. 800-423-TALK. This is On Point. We'll be right back. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We are in the arena in Philadelphia at the Democratic National Convention. This is the last night. Everybody covering all this, slightly punch drunk, been at it for 2 weeks now in Cleveland and Philadelphia. But for Hillary Clinton, everything is on the line tonight. She's had a cavalcade of big, heavy hitters come up and speak very powerfully for her this week, starting on the first night with Michelle Obama very powerfully and right on through last night. But she has to make the case. She has to close the deal. Tonight is her chance. We're talking about Hillary Clinton's big night, her challenge in selling herself to the American people and taking on Donald Trump. You can join us. What do you think? Has she already been effectively sold to you by the lineup on stage here in Philly? Are there questions, issues she still needs to answer, address to win you over? If you're never Hillary, are you reachable? How? And will you be following Donald Trump on Twitter while she's talking on stage? 800-423-8255 is our number. 800-423-TALK. Jamel Bowie is with us, chief political correspondent for Slate. Karen Tumulty is here, national political correspondent for The Washington Post. Margaret Tolliv is with us, senior White House correspondent covering the Clinton campaign for Bloomberg. She's headed out on a bus from here to Youngstown over several days starting tomorrow morning. And you can join us as well, 800-423-8255. She will be introduced tonight by her daughter. We saw a lot of Trumps last week. We saw Bill Clinton last night. Tonight it will be daughter Chelsea Clinton introducing her mom, Hillary Clinton. She talked to Today's Show's Matt Lauer this morning about introducing her mother. Lauer asked Chelsea what it would be like to watch her mother accept the nomination tonight.
I'm going to try really hard to not cry.
You're allowed.
I think my heart will burst. I mean, this election is so important to me because I'm now a mom. And as proud as I am of my mom, this election to me is fundamentally about my children, about Charlotte and Aiden. And I couldn't imagine a better president for them.
Tender emotions there from Chelsea Clinton, but this is not going to be a tender battle. Last week at a speech at the Republican convention in Cleveland, Donald Trump spoke of war and chaos in the Middle East and blamed it on Hillary Clinton, said it boiled down to this.
This is the legacy of Hillary Clinton. Death, destruction, terrorism, and weakness.
Okay, if that's the rhetorical package that he brings to the table, I mean, you know, the big howitzer guns, death, destruction, terrorism, and weakness, does she have to respond directly to that? Do you feel that that sticks on her? Is the Trump description of her legacy around her now?
I don't think so, in part because of the polling out of that Trump speech. The Gallup survey of viewers of that speech, about 51% mm-hmm. of respondents said they are less willing to vote for Trump because of that speech. So I don't think necessarily she has to worry about rebutting that charge.
Can we tell why? Too dark, too over the top, too theatrical?
Too over the top. Very sort of, I mean, even listening to it, it has this sort of like, you know, howitzer feel to it, like yeah. boom, boom, yeah. boom, boom. And it just, I think that this turned people off. As far as what Clinton...
But he got a bump. He got a polling bump. I mean...
A modest one. Okay. At the end of the day, 2 to 3 points, which is just below what you expect
from a convention.
Right, right.
Mm-hmm.
I think, you know, thinking about it more, I think one thing Clinton probably should aim for is directly addressing the extent to which her career has been surrounded by scandal and innuendo. Just like straight up saying to viewers that like, yes, this has, you know, there have been these questions around me and I want to talk about them. I want to talk to you, the American people, about all of this stuff and not shy away from it. I think...
Is that a winner to bring up the problems, Margaret? Is it a winner to bring up the problems?
It's just that she doesn't want to talk about it. She hasn't done a news conference in like two-thirds of a year, you know?
Seriously?
It's been a couple hundred days.
December was the last.
That is unbelievable. Unbelievable.
Okay, so she obviously doesn't want to talk about anything. Okay, so
you got Donald Trump throwing people out of press conferences. Your Washington Post colleague.
Yeah, I'd love to talk about that at some point.
We will, and Hillary not even having press conferences.
She doesn't really want to answer. She wants to answer the questions she wants to answer, not the questions that necessarily might get asked. And there are, you know, and some of the kind of questions that everyone thinks Trump may try to tap into and that everyone thinks she doesn't want to answer questions about involve the Clinton Foundation itself, fundraising, and just kind of the general legacy of the Clinton drama. And these are the things that, you know, Bill Clinton, in this very emotional, eloquent speech the other night, first half about personal issues,
yep.
when he hit 1997, he just skipped over all that and went straight
that Monica
to her
business. Forget about
and
it.
By the way, can I say, I think that was a huge missed opportunity. He did not have to dwell on it. But he could, I mean, every...
Some reference to his infidelities?
Well, you know,
really?
He,
you want to put that
could
on the
have,
table?
Yes, you could have said, I know this woman's capacity to love, and I yep. know how big her heart is because yep. I know her capacity to forgive.
Yeah.
Move on.
Yeah,
he didn't,
that's true.
He just made some
and
vague...
And there is strength in that.
He made some vague reference to good times and bad times and left the rest of America to sit there and remember what not only what went in, on in their marriage in 1998, but what they put the whole country,
through.
Is that the scandal that you'd have her address?
Karen? I don't think you can address. I think you could make some reference. And again, I'm not a speechwriter.
Mm-hmm.
But what you could make is a reference to having... learned from mistakes or something like that. Again, you don't need to dwell. You don't need to go yep. into the emails, but yep. you can just say, you know, I've fallen and I picked mm-hmm. myself up mm-hmm. and I've come out of this a better, stronger, wiser person.
I want to go to this issue of Trump's howitzer. I mean, that was a very, you know, pumped up testosterone speech last week, and that is kind of his style, and presumably he'll bring that out again. We'll see. I mean, she has had her own big punching moments in the campaign. This was in San Diego in June. She attacked Trump's fitness to be president.
He is not just unprepared. He is temperamentally unfit to hold an office that requires knowledge, stability, and immense responsibility.
Temperamentally unfit. And here she was last week at a campaign rally in Tampa reacting to the Republican convention and a line from Texas Senator Ted Cruz.
I never thought I would say these words, but Ted Cruz was right. In this election, do the right thing and vote your conscience. Vote for your future. Vote for a United States of America.
Karen, should she come out as a slugger? Should she come out as sly? Should she let Donald Trump, you know, hoist himself on his own petard and all that?
Well, I think the thing that she doesn't use enough, and we heard a little bit of it in the Ted Cruz thing, is humor.
Mm-hmm.
And oddly enough, and those of us who've seen her in off-the-record sessions, you know, settings, she can do that. But I think that, as they keep telling us in the campaign, you know, fighter is kind of her natural mode. And she somehow, overusing the word authentic here, but somehow it does feel like you're looking at the most authentic Hillary here.
When she's fighting, when she's fired
up. Exactly.
Let's go to our listeners. Ricky in Columbus, Georgia. Ricky, thank you for calling. You are on the air.
Hi. Yes, I would just echo the sentiments of the caller before me about the scandal that Hillary Clinton has been surrounded by her entire. I mean, I would go back to when she was first lady and the travel office scandal, and then raising funds for her Senate seat. You know, and then most recently with the FBI and them coming out and saying, okay, here are five or six different ways where what she has said does not line up with what we have found. And so
when it comes to the emails, but with all that, Ricky, what can she say tonight then that would address that field of concerns of yours? What can she say?
I think what someone just said before me about, you know, acknowledging that she has been imperfect, but that she has grown and that she is wiser and better. And then in the coming weeks, I think that there needs to be an answer to what the FBI has said she has misquoted or directly lied about. Like, she needs to answer those questions. She owes the American people those answers if she wants our votes.
Ricky, I really appreciate your call and the way you're thinking there. Jamel, does she have a kind of gaping wound, let's say most recently on the emails and the FBI chief saying, look, there's a big gap here between the facts as we found them and what she said? Does she have to come right up, own up to that? Can she do that in the middle of this without opening her flank to a huge attack by Donald Trump?
I don't know. James Comey did her no favors, and
well, he didn't bring charges.
No, he didn't bring charges. But there's a certain degree to which that may have even it would have been better. But sort of the you've done everything, but it's not quite illegal, but it's almost there.
Yeah.
Makes it very difficult to address that because it's not very satisfying to essentially say, hey, you know, I made a big mistake. I violated probably the spirit of the law, but I didn't really violate the law. So, you know, what are you going to do about it? So I don't really know what more she can say that she hasn't already said, but certainly forthrightly acknowledging that she was wrong and then moving on, I think, would be good. I think people need to hear that because I think, again, precisely because Americans don't doubt her ability to be president or be competent in the job.
Well, I don't know about everybody on that front. I mean, Donald Trump, you know, is fire hosing all over that.
Certainly, but if you look at the polling, you know, 50, 55, 60% of Americans will say, you know, she's obviously qualified to be president.
Yep.
So I think getting people past the sort of psychological block of I'm just not sure about her trustworthiness, which I should parenthetically say, some of that is just gender. Some of that, you know, you think about the stereotypes and notions about powerful women, and you hear them echoed in a lot of the rhetoric about Hillary Clinton. So there's
a kind of misogyny in there.
You can't dispel all of it, but there's some of it that is tied to concrete things.
And I think that Donald Trump has given her a big opening to be the optimist in this race. Donald, the Republican convention described an America that is on the edge of the apocalypse,
absolutely
practically.
Absolutely dark.
And we heard from Michelle Obama, I think, who probably gave the single best speech of this campaign, about a different vision of America. You know, it traditionally has been the Republicans who've been the optimistic party, the party that talks about American exceptionalism. 16 years ago in this very city, George W. Bush accepted his nomination with a speech that concluded about live on the east side of the mountain because that's where you see the sun come up.
Sunrise side, yeah.
There's no sunrise in Donald Trump's America. And that, I think, you know, if you look at recent history, the optimist tends to win.
But can she really go with that? I mean, at a time when You've got this huge gap. Real Clear Politics, average of polls shows the share of Americans who think the country on the wrong track is 46 percentage points greater than those who think it's on a favorable course. Yeah. You got Ross Douthat writing in the New York Times today. He says, go dark, Hillary. Yeah. He says the cold reality of 2016 is that most Americans don't seem to share President Obama's sweeping optimism. Yeah. Can she jump on the optimism bandwagon? If she does, is she just blowing by the concerns that drive a lot of Trump voters, that drove a lot of Sanders voters? Yeah.
There's no reason not to talk optimistically, but that's probably not how she kind of gets it done, right?
Everybody else has this week, though.
Donald Trump has given her a huge opportunity with this Russia thing earlier this week to drive home these kind of dual points that his unpredictability could be destabilizing and that he doesn't know anything about how diplomacy and foreign policy and national
security
should
work. Yeah, but that's Trump is dark, if she wants to frame him that way. But what about the darkness that is roiling in the country? Maybe not as big or bad or deep as Donald Trump's is, but still, maybe not as sunny as Barack Obama had it last night.
You win by winning, and you win in states. It's a national race that happens in states because of the Electoral College. So she has to figure out, where it's toughest. And honestly, the Trump thing gives her an opportunity. This Russia thing gives her an opportunity to test how many independents and Republicans will be so unsettled by some of these kind of traditionally core Republican concerns, national security and stability, that they can... Optimism is great. That's the icing on the cake. And Tim Kaine's supposed to do that. He's going to go around and make her feel happy and they'll giggle on stage. But hit the danger button
on Trump.
Absolutely.
Way out of bounds. So, Jamel?
The right track, wrong track numbers are cited a lot. And I'm not sure if they're telling us what they seem to be saying on face value. Because
Trump seems to think so. Because he's Trump sure seems, gone with the, oh
Trump
my
seems
God,
to think so. But you, there are two reasons you can think the country's on the wrong track. Because everything is spiraling into the abyss.
Yeah.
Or because you are frustrated that the president you elected can't get his agenda done.
Yes,
which then
true.
isn't a pessimistic view. It's a view of frustration.
It's just like, let's get it together.
Let's get it together.
We got
right?
it. Let's just do it.
And when you look at surveys of different subgroups of Americans, so you look at college-educated whites, you look at Latinos, you look at African-Americans, minorities and college-educated people have a generally optimistic view of the country.
Yeah.
They say they expect their children's lives to be better. So I think there's a disconnect between the kinds of numbers like the right track, wrong track, and what people are saying in other surveys and other polling, and Obama's approval rating, which has consistently been above 50% for this entire year.
And surging just in recent months. Jane in Boston, thank you for calling. Jane, you are on the air.
Well, I'm a Bernie supporter, Tom.
Hi.
And I'm no fan of Hillary, but I have to defend her.
Okay.
Out of fairness. There's just no comparison between Trump and Hillary Clinton. For one thing, if you look at the FBI testimony, we have not seen the transcripts of exactly the questions that were asked, and he answered. The FBI director never said she lied. He said, well, the answers aren't quite in accord or something like that.
Jane, you're a little kinder than he was, in fairness, but where do you go with that?
Well, where I go with that is when it comes to Trump's frauds, we've got lots of court testimony. It's been in the New York Times, has published documents that showed the testimony of people at Trump University.
Trump University and all the rest, yeah.
Who showed students who described how they were defrauded, employees who said that they had no experience in teaching the courses that Trump promised they were experts in. And we have all these lawsuits against him. We've got actual documentation against his defrauding and cheating many, many people.
So what are you saying? Hillary Clinton has nothing to apologize for, or he has more to apologize for? What's your point with it, Jane?
Well, my point is that we may not... I think this idea of trusting Hillary is kind of blown up by the media more than it really should be. And there isn't a lot of documentation against anything that she's done that's illegal.
I mean, it may be chicken and egg, and certainly there are partisans in there who pump it forward, and then inevitably the media works with it. But is it not a factor out there, Margaret? It is a real issue for her. Or again, is there some nuance in the polls that we're missing?
I mean, to dumb it down maybe a little bit too much, if all registered Democrats turned out and voted for Hillary Clinton, she'd win. So the
concern, what does that have to do with the trust issue?
It doesn't. Because the point is that this is about turnout. The trust issue really goes to turnout and turning out her own base. I mean, that,
I mean, are you enthusiastic enough about her? That
yes.
The whatever,
or will you
trust
stay home? The issue is not, are Bernie Sanders supporters going to vote for Donald Trump? It's, are Bernie Sanders supporters going to stay home? And is their general vocal dissatisfaction going to turn off other voters who aren't really Bernie fans? They're just like, eh, about this year.
Turnout, and she's got to be appealing
enough.
Urgently appealing enough to bring them out.
Right.
Well, I mean, if it's a toss-up in the vote tonight, of course, the convention here may change those polls a lot over the next week. We'll see, but it's a real race. She's got to be pretty convincingly appealing, and tonight is her night. Margaret Tollop with Bloomberg News, Karen Tumulty with The Washington Post, Jamelle Bouie with Slate. Please stand by. We're talking about Hillary's big night. You can join us. Put your speechwriter's hat on. What should Hillary say tonight? 800-423-8255. 800-423-TALK in Philadelphia. This is On Point. We'll be right back.
Support for On Point with Tom Ashbrook and the following message comes from Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Rocket Mortgage brings home financing into the 21st century with a completely online process that's fast, easy, and convenient. Using a phone or tablet, you can safely share bank statements and pay stubs without having to dig through piles of paperwork. It takes just a few minutes to get a custom mortgage solution on your terms, wherever and whenever you want. Check out Rocket Mortgage at quickenloans.com/onpoint. Equal housing lender, licensed in all 50 states. NMLS consumeraccess.org number 3030.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point in Philadelphia at the Democratic National Convention. Last night of that convention, big speeches all week this week. And tonight, it's Hillary Clinton formally accepting the nomination. First woman nominated by a major party in this country ever to be their candidate for the presidency of the United States. You can join us tonight. What do you think Hillary needs to say tonight? What do American voters want, need to hear tonight? How does she sway the electorate toward her in this contest with Donald Trump? We're at 800-423-8255, 800-423-TALK with my guests right here, Jamelle Bouie, Chief Political Correspondent for Slate, Karen Tumulty, National Political Correspondent for The Washington Post, Margaret Tollop, Senior White House Correspondent for Bloomberg. You can join us as well, 800-423-TALK. It is dark out there in Trump land. How will she respond? This was Trump last week at the Republican convention, laying out how he sees America right now.
The attacks on our police and the terrorism of our cities threaten our very way of life. Any politician who does not grasp this danger is not fit to lead our country.
Danger, danger, danger. Hillary Clinton talks about those issues, but she talks a lot about opportunity and opportunity for all. Here she was in Miami on Saturday with Tim Kaine, her running mate, talking about what they would accomplish, giving the middle class a raise, giving tax relief to working families, creating more jobs.
We're going to make sure every child in America has the chance to live up to his or her God-given potential. So please, join us.
Jamelle Bouie, I want to ask you about this theme. There is a lot this week in Philadelphia from the stage and a lot from Hillary wherever she goes about social inclusion, about right. Bringing everybody in as a major, major point of pride and effort and focus. On the other hand, you have Donald Trump, who doesn't say a whole lot about that, but it's about security.
Right.
And economic security, ultimately, kind of above all. I mean, there's other kinds of security. Talks about literal dangers. But what about this? Are the Democrats on the right theme for winning with social inclusion in 2016 versus economic security?
Well, I think it speaks to sort of the fundamental divide that we see with this election, which is that Donald Trump's coalition, the voters supporting Donald Trump, are overwhelmingly white. They are, you know, largely working class, but there's a substantial number who you would describe as sort of like middle class. They feel like the country's, the country's social, the way it's been socially organized, has gotten away from them. Mm-hmm. You know, one of the things that if you want to figure out if a voter is most likely to support Donald Trump, the one variable that will tell you every time, there's been a lot of great research over the past 6 months to show this, is basically their feelings about immigrants or African Americans. People with negative feelings about immigrants and African Americans are most likely to support Donald Trump. So that's the Trump coalition. And the Hillary Clinton coalition is basically everyone else, right? It's it is African Americans. It is Hispanics. It is Asian Americans. It is sort of the rising electorate of people who in the last 20 years have become more integrated into the broader society. And so the message of social inclusion is for them, because this is basically the kind of country they want to live in, a pluralistic country that respects them and their aspirations.
So in political terms, are these great themes actually code? Social inclusion means minority Americans? Economic security means white Americans?
I think that is a good deal of it. I mean, for as much as we talk about Trump voters in terms of economic anxiety, you look at what Trump talked about last Friday. He talked about crime. He talked about illegal immigrants killing, engaging in crimes. He mentioned trade. He offered no policies on trade. He talked very little about trade. Mm-hmm. When he's casually chatting, trade is just an afterthought. And he continuously goes back to immigrants, to Muslims, to crime. I think that is what is driving the core of his support. And that is what the Clinton message in a lot of ways is meant to counter and to create an opposite basis for solidarity around this pluralistic idea of America.
Yep, Margaret, can she talk social inclusion from the podium tonight? She almost has to. I mean, it's so central. And reach out to that disaffected, white, working-class, middle-class voter with an economic security. Can you do those in the same package?
Are you familiar with the phrase, it takes a village?
Yes, I have heard this phrase, but not everybody likes the shape of the village, the social order as it's evolving, as Jamel says.
But this is Hillary Clinton's, book. And It Takes a Village is a 20-year-old product for her, but it will be a theme that we hear about tonight in her press.
Because I think a lot of disaffected, perhaps white voters are saying, wait a minute, it takes a village just a way of saying collective kind of action that puts me in the same, boat as a lot of people, and I'm not sure.
If part of the village is active members of the military, retired members of the military, military advisors, national security advisors, Republicans, former Reagan administration officials, that is going to be part of her case to those people. Tim Kaine is another part of her case to those people. You can argue about how much a vice president matters, but he's not only a white guy, but he's a white guy from the Midwest who's Catholic, whose dad was, a unionized worker, and his mom was a teacher. His son is an active member of the military. When you really peel back the onion on Tim Kaine, he's like a younger version in many ways of Joe Biden, which is exactly why Obama picked Joe Biden, to carry him in those kind of places. And those are places where Clinton did better than Obama, but where Clinton is not doing as well as Trump. Tim Kaine is part of the answer to that. And also this takes a village concept.
Yeah.
It's not just that it's of social inclusion. It is the idea of collaboration and team building, and a lot of times women, when they're trying to exert leadership, find that no one really wants the woman in charge, but if the woman is part of a group that's in charge, they're more comfortable with it. I actually do think this is a theme that she's going to test.
Well, I mean, but that's a big deal whether that works or not, because it seems polar opposite from Donald Trump. It sort of takes a village, nurturing versus his, what is it, sort of a unbridle the horse,
and
the stallion,
you heard Obama saying last night, which is nobody wants to be ruled. It's not about one person. They're testing this week and in the next few days to see if it works, and if it doesn't, they got 3 months to figure something else
out. Does she have a real chance to reach out to the same disaffected voters? We'll talk about Sanders people in a moment, but that have come to the Trump side.
Some of them. West Virginia, the coal industry, they're basically gone. But I think that she can talk to aspirations. She can talk to, for instance, the cost of college, people who don't want their kids so burdened by college debt that they could never afford a house. I think she can bring in some of them.
Let's go to Brandon in Columbus, Ohio. Brandon, thank you very much for calling.
Hi. I was just calling basically to say I'm kind of wondering when things are going to switch to a more information and truth-based approach, and when we're going to just start trying to solve problems and make life better for everybody as opposed to positioning for the sake of it. At some point, it's got to stop. There's nothing else to really do except solve problems. And they need to be solved.
I think Hillary would love to get you on the line, Brandon. That sounds like that's her song, though, whether she can do it from the stage and think she can win with it. I appreciate your call, Brandon. How about it? I mean, there is a part of the electorate that you get in any campaign season, and you get all kinds of positioning going on. People are sitting there, wait a minute, can we just have some information, some truth, and, cut through all this? Is that a vain hope, Jamel?
I honestly am always sort of perplexed by when I hear that, because in my experience, when voters have said that to me, and then I reply with, you know, Mitt Romney had this plan, you know, they're sort of resisted. It's sort of like, well, yeah, but, you know, it's just talk.
Yeah, yeah.
And so it's like, I'm not sure what exactly these voters are looking for.
Yeah.
And I have a sense that what is driving them is, like, just a general purpose discussed with the whole idea of politics. They want someone just to do something.
But there is a pragmatic centrist swath. Oh, some sort of center Republicans and some sort of center Democrats, and that's who she's playing for. It's not right that she's trying to pick up the you know, displaced coal workers in West Virginia. She's trying to pick up people who would totally have voted for John Kasich or Paul Ryan this year, but don't feel that way about Donald Trump. That's the village that she's, those are the people she wants to let into the village.
And it's, you know, on the other side of the ledger here, Donald Trump's answer to every policy question is, I'm Donald Trump. And you talk to his supporters, and most of the ones, at least, that I have talked to don't really think that wall is going to get built and don't really think there's any practical way of keeping Muslims out of the country. But they do get a sense of the guy that he just won't get pushed around, and they feel like they've been pushed around. And, you know, so he's basically running as, you know, a personality and an aura and a vibe. And I don't know that the answer to that is going to be detailed policy plans.
Mm-hmm. So speaking of information and truth, I want to come back to this issue. Your Washington Post reporter, I think this is it Jose Del Real,
right,
who was denied access with his reporting equipment to a Trump rally in Milwaukee. Was it today?
Yeah,
yesterday?
It was yesterday. Why? Well, here's the deal. A few weeks ago, the Trump campaign announced that they were banning the Washington. They were not going to grant press credentials to the Washington Post
because?
To cover his events because they didn't like a specific headline on a story that they didn't think was fair. So we
is there precedent for this in coverage of presidential politics year or any year?
Trump has done this to other organizations, but I have not known of any candidate who has before him done this. So we have been covering these events by standing in line with the general public,
right,
sometimes many hours, to just enter these events as any American would. Well, last night, Jose Del Real, very good, mm-hmm, solid, mm-hmm, steady reporter, mm-hmm, was told that he could not get into an event and that as long as he's with the Washington Post, he was frisked, mm-hmm, he was harassed. And again, we have made a decision. We are not protesting this ban. We are doing what we can to work our way around it.
But how does this line up with the First Amendment and with the press freedom in this country and with our caller's desire for information and truth? Reporters can't even get in there and see what's being said.
You know, as we sit here in Philadelphia,
yes,
we can remember that the founders of our country wrote the First Amendment at a time when the press of that day was not exactly docile. Mm-hmm. They were dealing with a pretty, you know, bias wouldn't even begin to describe the kind of reporters they were dealing with, but they understood that there is something central to our values and central to what we care about that an unfettered free press should be part of. And Donald Trump says he would change the libel laws, he would do all kinds of things, primarily to get rid of coverage he doesn't like.
Jamel, is that an opportunity for Hillary Clinton to say he's so thin-skinned, he can't even let reporters in to cover his speeches, or is she in no place to do that if she hasn't had a press conference in since December?
Well, you know, it's one thing to not have a press conference, but I do think that's categorically different than, you know, promising to change libel laws, tossing out reporters, refusing to let them cover anything. I think, and this would harken back to Obama's speech last night, I think there is space for Clinton to make essentially the pro-democracy argument,
mm-hmm,
that,
mm-hmm,
we are a free society, mm-hmm, we are a democratic society, mm-hmm, and that Trump isn't just, I don't just disagree with Trump, but Trump, mm-hmm, is in an important way threatening norms, mm-hmm, that we all value and cherish, or that we all ought to value and cherish.
Ron in Riverside, California. Ron, thank you for calling. You are on the air.
Hi. How you doing?
Good.
My thing is I'm listening to everybody talk about Senator Clinton and how she needs to defend herself and about the emails, about Benghazi. I think the point is that a lot of people want this party unified, especially myself. She needs to talk to Senator Sanders delegates to their supporters and let them know, you know, you guys brought a good platform, but I'm the one who's being chosen. I'll be the one to continue to take some of your things and bring into our fold and unify this party, because you are the voice of America and I'm your representative. That's how I see it. This whole thing of trying to constantly defend her past actions or things that are going on.
Vis-a-vis Bernie Sanders in particular.
Defensive.
Yep. Ron, I appreciate your call from California. How about it? How does she most effectively speak to Sanders supporters? And there are many in this hall tonight, and we may once again hear vociferously from them. Even during her speech, we hear, what can she say, Margaret, to reach out effectively to them in the hall and around the country?
She can thank Bernie Sanders, as she already has, and she should continue to do so, for bringing a whole new generation and segment of people into political activism. She should thank them for caring about issues. She should talk about how she's listening and she's incorporated many of the things they care about, and then she should move on. The primary's over. It's a general election. And
easy to say, but will they?
And she has calculated that most of those people are not going to vote for Donald Trump, and that the segment she has to win is on the other, is in the middle of the spectrum.
We're all sitting here suddenly looking at our mobile phones. Yeah. There are some excerpts of Clinton's speech has come out. Is there anything that we can see so far that's jumping out at you? I don't know. Any phrase or?
We can. The portions of the speech that they're releasing now in excerpts are national security focused, and they include passages like America's once again at a moment of reckoning, powerful forces threatening to pull us apart, clear-eyed about what the country's up against, but you know, the notion that people are looking for reassurance and steady leadership. That's
steady
code word
leadership
for not Donald Trump. Mm-hmm. We will obviously hear about him and about her and her sense of the distinction between those two tonight.
What's so interesting to me about this and last night, it's very reminiscent of Nixon's 1968 campaign.
Why? How?
Not in a negative way. Mm-hmm. In a sort of, I am the candidate of the majority of Americans who are not loud, who are not boisterous, who are not weird.
Imagine
like Trump is.
Quiet, the silent majority.
And I am the steady hand that will guide this country.
Be with
this
me
turbulent.
Now.
Right, right. It's very Nixonian, but not in like the horrible way.
And Tim Kaine does the weird Nixon thing with his hands, too.
Does he do the double piece sign with
his hands? It's almost like, it's the 70s. All over again.
Karen, how do you see her prospects as we sit here tonight, just a minute away from us stepping off stage and the parade beginning to move toward her?
Well, I think, the phrase that jumped out at me is, we are not afraid.
Excerpts.
Right. Mm-hmm. This is a closer race than I think a lot of us would have thought. And the story of Donald Trump beginning to end is underestimation. So it's going to be a really interesting race to cover.
You're with her a lot, Margaret. Does she got the juice?
She, as Karen said, when she's up against the wall, she likes to fight. Can you fight and be likable at the same time? That's a big test, and it probably matters a little bit in the months to come.
Jamel, last word goes to you tonight. The most important, if it's a vibe and an aura that she's got to leave, what is the vibe and aura for Hillary Clinton that she needs to put out there tonight?
I honestly have no idea.
Who's your mama?
Okay. Yeah. Might be her. President, Madam President, just could be. Jamel Bowie with Slate, Karen Tumulty with The Washington Post, Margaret Tollett with Bloomberg. It's great to have all of you with us. Thank you so much for being here in the hall,
Don,
with us tonight.
Thank you.
Listeners,
pleasure.
This has been great from Cleveland right through Philadelphia, live with you every night. It's been so terrific. Thanks to all of our crew here in Philadelphia, in Cleveland, around the country. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.